Welcome to Protecting Project Pulp, part of the District of Wonders Network, featuring Starship Sofa, Tales to Terrify, and Crime City Central. Everyone has a story in the District of Wonders. Come and find yours.
This is Protecting Project Pulp, episode 78. I'm your host, Simon Hildebrandt. Welcome to the show. This week we bring you part two of Shadows in the Moonlight by Robert E. Howard, narrated by Nick Cam. As this is the second part of this story, let's get straight to it. For information about our author and narrator, start with our previous show, episode 77. So without further ado, let's return to The Shadows in the Moonlight by Robert E. Howard, narrated by Nick Cam.
The sun was hanging low when Olivia regained her senses. A faint wind wafted to her ears distant shouts and snatches of ribald song. Rising cautiously, she looked out across the plateau. She saw the pirates clustered about a great fire outside the ruins, and her heart leapt as a group emerged from the interior, dragging some object she knew was Conan. They propped him against the wall, still evidently bound fast, and there ensued a long discussion with much brandishing of weapons. At last they dragged him back into the hall and took up anew the business of ale-guzzling. Olivia sighed. At least she knew that the Cimmerian still lived. Fresh determination steeled her. As soon as night fell, she would steal to those grim ruins and free him or be taken herself in the attempt. And she knew it was not selfish interest alone which prompted her decision. With this in mind, she ventured to creep from her refuge to pluck and eat nuts which grew sparsely near at hand. She had not eaten since the day before. It was while so occupied that she was troubled by a sensation of being watched. She scanned the rocks nervously, then, with a shuddering suspicion, crept to the north edge of the cliff and gazed down into the waving green mass below, already dusky with sunset. She saw nothing. It was impossible that she could be seen, when not on the cliff's edge, by anything lurking in those woods. Yet she distinctly felt the glare of hidden eyes, and felt that something animate and sentient was aware of her presence and her hiding place. Stealing back to her rocky eyrie, she lay watching the distant ruins until the dusk of night masked them, and she marked their position by the flickering flames about which black figures leapt and cavorted groggily. Then she rose. It was time to make her attempt. But first she stole back to the northern edge of the cliff and looked down into the woods that bordered the beach. And as she strained her eyes in the dim starlight, she stiffened, and an icy hand touched her heart. Far below her something moved. It was as if a black shadow detached itself from the gulf of shadows below her. It moved slowly up the sheer face of the cliff, a vague bulk, shapeless in the semi-darkness. Panic caught Olivia by the throat, and she struggled with the scream that tugged at her lips. Turning, she fled down the southern slope. That flight down the shadowed cliff was a nightmare in which she slid and scrambled, catching at jagged rocks with cold fingers. As she tore her tender skin and bruised her soft limbs on the rugged boulders over which Conan had so lightly lifted her, she realized again her dependence on the iron-thewed barbarian. But this thought was but one in a fluttering maelstrom of dizzy fright. The descent seemed endless, but at last her feet struck the grassy levels, and in a very frenzy of eagerness she sped away towards the fire that burned like the red heart of night. Behind her, as she fled, she heard a shower of stones rattle down the steep slope, and the sound lent wings to her heels. What grisly climber dislodged those stones she dared not try to think? Strenuous physical action dissipated her blind terror somewhat, and before she had reached the ruin her mind was clear, her reasoning faculties alert, though her limbs trembled from her efforts. She dropped to the sward and wriggled along on her belly until, from behind a small tree that had escaped the axes of the pirates, she watched her enemies. They had completed their supper, but were still drinking, dipping pewter mugs or jeweled goblets into the broken heads of the wine caskets. Some were already snoring drunkenly on the grass, while others had staggered into the ruins. Of Conan she saw nothing. She lay there, while the dew formed on the grass about her and the leaves overhead, and the men about the fire cursed, gambled, and argued. There were only a few about the fire. Most of them had gone into the ruins to sleep. She lay watching them, her nerves taut with the strain of waiting, the flesh crawling between her shoulders at the thought of what might be watching her in turn, of what might be stealing up behind her. Time dragged on leaden feet. One by one, the revelers sank down in drunken slumber until all were stretched senseless beside the dying fire. Olivia hesitated, then was galvanized by a distant glow rising through the trees. The moon was rising. With a gasp, she rose and hurried toward the ruins. Her flesh crawled as she tiptoed among the drunken shapes that sprawled beside the gaping portal. Inside were many more. They shifted and mumbled in their besotted dreams, but none awakened as she glided among them. A sob of joy rose to her lips as she saw Conan. The Cimmerian was wide awake, bound upright to a pillar, his eyes gleaming in the faint reflection of the waning fire outside. Picking her way among the sleepers, she approached him. Lightly as she had come, he had heard her, had seen her when first framed in the portal. A faint grin touched his hard lips. She reached him and clung to him an instant. He felt the quick beating of her heart against his breast. Through a broad crevice in the wall stole a beam of moonlight, and the air was instantly supercharged with subtle tension. Conan felt it and stiffened. Olivia felt it and gasped. The sleepers snored on. Bending quickly, she drew a dagger from its senseless owner's belt and set to work on Conan's bonds. They were sail cords, thick and heavy and tied with the craft of a sailor. She toiled desperately while the tide of moonlight crept slowly across the floor towards the feet of the crouching black figures between the pillars. Her breath came in gasps. Conan's wrists were free, but his elbows and legs were still bound fast. She glanced fleetingly at the figures along the walls, waiting, waiting. They seemed to watch her with the awful patience of the undead. The drunkards beneath her feet began to stir and groan in their sleep. The moonlight crept down the hall, touching the black feet. The cords fell from Conan's arms, and taking the dagger from her, he ripped the bonds from his legs with a single quick slash. He stepped out from the pillar, flexing his limbs, stoically enduring the agony of returning circulation. Olivia crouched against him, shaking like a leaf. Was it some trick of the moonlight that touched the eyes of the black figures with fire, so that they glimmered redly in the shadows? Conan moved with the abruptness of a jungle cat. Catching up his sword from where it lay in a stack of weapons nearby, he lifted Olivia lightly from her feet and glided through an opening that gaped in the ivy-grown wall. No words passed between them. Lifting her in his arms, he set off swiftly across the moon-bathed sward, her arms about his iron neck. The Ophirian closed her eyes, cradling her dark, curly hair against his massive shoulder. A delicious sense of security stole over her. In spite of his burden, the Cimmerian crossed the plateau swiftly, and Olivia, opening her eyes, saw they were passing under the shadow of the cliffs. "Something climbed the cliffs," she whispered. "I heard it scrambling behind me as I came down." "We'll have to chance it," he grunted. "I am not afraid now," she sighed. "You were not afraid when you came to free me either," he answered. "Crom, what a day it has been. Such haggling and wrangling I never heard. I'm nearly deaf. Aratus wished to cut out my heart, and Ivanos refused, despite Aratus, whom he hates. All day long they snarled and spat at one another, and the crew quickly grew too drunk to vault either way." He halted suddenly, an image of bronze in the moonlight. With a quick gesture, he tossed the girl lightly to one side and behind him. Rising to her knees on the soft sward, she screamed at what she saw. Out of the shadows of the cliffs moved a monstrous, shambling bulk, an anthropomorphic horror, a grotesque travesty of creation. In general outline, it was not unlike a man, but its face, limned in the bright moonlight, was bestial, with close-set ears, flaring nostrils, and a great flabby-lipped mouth in which gleamed white tusk-like fangs. It was covered with shaggy greyish hair, shot with silver which shone in the moonlight, and its great misshapen paws hung nearly to the earth. Its bulk was tremendous, as it stood on its short bowed legs. Its bullet head rose above that of a man who faced it. The sweep of the hairy breast and giant shoulders was breathtaking. The huge arms were like knotted trees. The moonlight scene swam to Olivia's sight. This, then, was the end of the trail. For what human could withstand the fury of that hairy mountain of thews and ferocity? Yet as she stared in wide-eyed horror at the bronze figure facing the monster, she sensed a kinship in the antagonist that was almost appalling. This was less a struggle between man and beast than a conflict between two creatures of the wild, equally merciless and ferocious. With a flash of white tusks, the monster charged. The mighty arms spread wide as the beast plunged, stupefyingly quick for all its vast bulk and stunted legs. Conan's action was a blur of speed Olivia's eyes could not follow. She only saw that he evaded the deadly grasp, and his sword, flashing like a jet of white lightning, sheared through one of those massive arms between shoulder and elbow. A great spout of blood deluged the sword as the severed member fell, twitching horribly. But even as the sword bit through, the other malformed hand locked in Conan's black mane. Only the iron-necked muscles of the Cimmerian saved him from a broken neck that instant. His left hand darted out to clamp on the beast's squat throat. His left knee was jammed hard against the brute's hairy belly. Then began a terrific struggle, which lasted only seconds, which seemed like ages to the paralyzed girl. The ape maintained his grasp in Conan's hair, dragging him toward the tusks that glistened in the moonlight. The Cimmerian resisted this effort with his left arm rigid as iron, while the sword in his right hand, wielded like a butcher knife, sank again and again into the groin, breast and belly of his captor. The beast took its punishment in awful silence, apparently unweakened by the blood that gushed from its ghastly wounds. Swiftly, the terrible strength of the anthropoid overcame the leverage of braced arm and knee. Inexorably, Conan's arm bent under the strain. Nearer and nearer he was drawn to the slavering jaws that gaped for his life. Now the blazing eyes of the barbarian glared into the bloodshot eyes of the ape. But as Conan tugged vainly at his sword, wedged deep in the hairy body, the frothing jaws snapped spasmodically shut an inch from the Cimmerian's face, and he was hurled to the sward by the dying convulsions of the monster. Olivia, half-fainting, saw the ape heaving, thrashing and writhing, gripping, man-like, the hilt that jutted from its body. A sickening instant of this, then the great bulk quivered and lay still. Conan rose and limped over to the corpse. The Cimmerian breathed heavily and walked like a man whose joints and muscles had been wrenched and twisted almost to their limit of endurance. He felt his bloody scalp and swore at the sight of the long, black, red-stained strands still grasped in the monster's shaggy hand.
"Crom," he panted, "I feel as if I'd been racked. I'd rather fight a dozen men. Another instant and he'd have bitten off my head. Blast him, he's torn a handful of my hair out by the roots."
Gripping his hilt with both hands, he tugged and worked it free. Olivia stole close to clasp his arm and stare down, wide-eyed, at the sprawling monster.
What is it?" she whispered.
"A grey man-ape," he grunted. "Dumb and man-eating. They dwell in the hills that border the eastern shore of this sea. How this one got to this island, I can't say. Maybe he floated here on driftwood, blown out from the mainland in a storm."
"And it was he that threw that stone?"
"Yes. I suspected what it was when we stood in the thicket and saw the boughs bending over our heads. These creatures always lurk in the deepest woods they can find, and seldom emerge. What brought him out into the open, I can't say. But it was lucky for us. I'd have had no chance with him among the trees."
"It followed me," she shivered. "I saw it climbing the cliffs."
"And following his instinct, he lurked in the shadows of the cliff instead of following you out across the plateau. His kind are creatures of darkness and the silent places, haters of sun and moon."
"Do you suppose there are others?"
"No. else the pirates had been attacked when they went through the woods. The grey ape is wary for all his strength, as shown by his hesitancy in falling upon us in the thicket. His lust for you must have been great, to have driven him to attack us finally in the open. What?
He started and wheeled back towards the way they had come. The night had been split by an awful scream. It came from the ruins. Instantly, there followed a mad medley of yells, shrieks and cries of blasphemous agony. Though accompanied by a ringing of steel, the sounds were of massacre rather than battle. Conan stood frozen, the girl clinging to him in a frenzy of terror. The clamour rose to a crescendo of madness, and then the Cimmerian turned and went swiftly toward the rim of the plateau, with its fringe of moon-limed trees. Olivia's legs were trembling so that she could not walk, so he carried her, and her heart calmed its frantic pounding as she nestled into his cradling arms. They passed under the shadowy forest, but the clusters of blackness held no terrors. The rifts of silver discovered no grisly shape. Nightbirds murmured slumberously. The yells of slaughter dwindled behind them, masked in the distance to a confused jumble of sound. Somewhere, a parrot called like an eerie echo. So they came to the tree-fringed water's edge and saw the galley lying at anchor, her sail shining white in the moonlight. Already the stars were paling for dawn. In the ghastly whiteness of dawn, a handful of tattered, blood-stained figures staggered through the trees and out to the narrow beach. There were 44 of them, and they were a cowed and demoralized band. With panting haste, they plunged into the water and began to wade toward the galley, when a stern challenge brought them up standing. Etched against the whitening sky, they saw Conan the Cimmerian standing in the bows, sword in hand, his black mane tossing in the dawn wind.
"Stand," he ordered. "Come no nearer. What would you have, dogs?"
"Let us come aboard,"
croaked a hairy rogue, fingering a bloody stump of ear.
"We're begone from the Devil's Island."
"The first man who tries to climb over the side, I'll split his skull," promised Conan.
There were 44 to 1, but he held the whip hand. The fight had been hammered out of them.
"Let us come aboard, good Conan,"
whined a red-sashed Samorian, glancing fearfully over his shoulder at the silent woods.
"We have been so mauled, bitten, scratched and rended, and are so weary from fighting and running that none of us can lift a sword."
"Where is that dog, Aratus?" demanded Conan.
"Dead with the others. It was devils that fell on us. They were rending us to pieces before we could awake. A dozen good rovers died in their sleep. The ruins were full of flame-eyed shadows with tearing fangs and sharp talons."
"Aye," put in another corsair,
"there were demons of the isle, which took their form of molten images to befool us, Ishtar. We lay down to sleep among them. We are no cowards. We fought them as long as mortal men may strive against the powers of darkness. Then we broke away and left them tearing at the corpses like jackals. But surely they'll pursue us."
"Aye, let us come aboard," clamoured a lean Shemite.
"Let us come in peace, or we must come sword in hand. And though we be so weary, you will doubtless slay many of us, yet you cannot prevail against so many."
"Then I'll knock a hole in the planks and sink her," answered Conan grimly.
A frantic chorus of expostulation rose, which Conan silenced with a lion roar.
"Dogs, must I aid my enemies? Shall I let you come aboard and cut out my heart?"
"Nay, nay," they cried eagerly. "Friends, friends, Conan, we are thy comrades. We be all lusty rogues together. We hate the King of Turan, not each other."
Their gaze hung on his brown, frowning face.
"Then, if I am one of the Brotherhood," he grunted, "the laws of the trade apply to me. And since I killed your chief in fair fight, then I am your captain.
There was no dissent. The pirates were too cowed and battered to have any thought except a desire to get away from that island of fear. Conan's gaze sought out the blood-stained figure of the Corinthian.
How, Ivanus? He challenged. You took my part once. Will you uphold my claims again? Aye, by Mitra.
The pirate, sensing the trend of feeling, was eager to ingratiate himself with the Cimmerian.
He's right, lads. He is our lawful captain.
A medley of acquiescence rose, lacking enthusiasm, perhaps, but with sincerity accentuated by the feel of the silent woods behind them, which might mask creeping ebony devils with red eyes and dripping talons.
Swear by the hilt,
Conan demanded. 44 sword hilts were lifted toward him, and the 44 voices blended in the corsair's oath of allegiance. Conan grinned and sheathed his sword.
Come aboard, my bold swashbucklers, and take the oars.
He turned and lifted Olivia to her feet from where she had crouched shielded by the gunwales. And what of me, sir? She asked.
What would you?
He countered, watching her narrowly. To go with you wherever your path may lie, she cried, throwing her white arms about his bronze neck. The pirates, clambering over the rail, gasped in amazement.
To sail a road of blood and slaughter? He questioned. This keel will stain the blue waves crimson wherever it ploughs.
Aye, to sail with you on blue seas or red, she answered passionately. You are a barbarian, and I am an outcast denied by my people. We are both pariahs, wanderers on earth. Oh, take me with you. With a gusty laugh, he lifted her to his fierce lips.
I'll make you queen of the blue sea. Cast off their dogs. We'll scorch King Yildiz's pantaloons yet by Chrome.
That was the conclusion of Shadows in the Moonlight by Robert E. Howard, narrated by Nick Cam. Conan is one of the great pillars of the pulp genre, having spawned books, films, comics, and even games over the last few decades, in a vast canon greater than Howard himself could possibly have imagined. I particularly like the artwork it inspired. Frank Frazetta is the king of sword and sorcery art, and you'll find some lovely examples if you search online for his name, paired with Conan. I think what really made this story fly, though, was the narration. We were incredibly lucky to get Nick Cam for it, and his performance truly brought the great barbarian to life. Thanks, Nick. Please leave a comment on our site at protectingprojectpulp.com or join the conversation in the District of Wonders forum linked from the site menu. This has been one of my favourite episodes yet, and we'd love to hear what you thought of it. And while you're there, don't forget to subscribe to the show via iTunes or your podcast app of choice. Just click the subscribe link. Thanks for listening from everyone here at PPP. Our assistant editor, Fred Heimbaugh, our sound engineer, Tom O'Dwyer, our producer, Tony C. Smith, and from me, your host, Simon Hildebrandt. We hope you'll join us next time for episode 79, when we'll bring you Beast Jewel of Mars by V.E. Thiessen. Remember that a barbarian's code might trump the plotting of more civilized men. And have a great week.
This presentation has been brought to you by the District of Wonders Network, dedicated to podcasting the finest genre fiction. You can learn more about the District of Wonders and their many literary productions at their website, www.districtofwonders.com. Thank you for listening.